From NPR Music, it's From the Top, the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, celebrating 10 years on the air. Today, from the William Charles Lunalilo Center at the Kamehameha School's Hawaii campus in Keaau on the Big Island, our lineup of outstanding performers includes a 14-year-old pianist from Oahu who has to fight his cousins to practice, and a 17-year-old flutist from back on the mainland who may be playing the wrong instrument. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, one of America's great concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome and aloha, everybody. It's such a great pleasure to be here. And I can't tell you how honored we are at your enthusiasm and support. Here we are, not only have a full house tonight, but there's a From the Top first. In the parking lot, there's actually a tailgating party for our show. Hopefully a start of a big tradition. I'm all for it. As Joanne mentioned, today we're in Keaau, which is just outside of Hilo on the east side of the Big Island of Hawaii. And we're here with our deepest thanks to our friends at Hawaii Public Radio. This side of the island is a lush and incredibly beautiful place, but what I love is that you can really feel the sense of culture, the old Hawaiian culture here in the centuries-old wooden storefronts, the traditional arts, a reverence for the natural beauty of this world, and as you'll hear, in the traditional music. Toward the end of today's show, we'll hear a 16-year-old who's carrying on the tradition of the Hawaiian slack key guitar. But first, let's meet a trio brought to paradise from the distinctly non-Hawaiian climate of Chicago. Please welcome Trifecta. This trifecta, this perfection, is made up of Lauren Williams, 17-year-old oboist, Quinn Delaney, 18-year-old bassoonist, and Frank Wu, our pianist, at 16 years old. All study at Midwest Young Artists. Guys, it's January. It's awfully nice to be in Hawaii, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Very good. Come on, admit it. It's not just nice. It's a miracle. Here you were, back in Chicago, right before From the Top.
Ugh. Oh, so terrible. Nasty.
And here you are, transformed on the Big Island.
Oh, so nice.
All right, don't get too laid back, you guys. You have some Craggy Poulenc to play. Lauren, what is this piece you're going to do?
We're going to play the first movement of Poulenc's trio for bassoon, oboe, and piano.
And when you're ready, please take it from the top. Frank, I'm going to come turn pages for you.
Thank you.
From Chicago, Lauren Williams, 17-year-old oboist, Quinn Delaney, 18-year-old bassoonist, and Frank Yu, 16-year-old pianist. Their coach is Naomi Bensdorf-Frisch.
That was spectacular, you guys. I think you haven't been on the island long enough, because clearly that probably holds the land speed record for that movement.
Thank you.
I speak from experience. So get out and hang 10 for a little while, all right? And just try and take a load off. Lauren, this piece has so many shifts in mood. Is that a challenge or is that a luxury?
Well, it's definitely a challenge because, I mean, it's also a luxury, but it's definitely a challenge because it's sort of like being an actor and having to play 10 different roles, you know, in one play. And every 5 measures, you know, suddenly it'll shift moods and it'll suddenly be sad and then it'll be happy again and then it'll be really slow and beautiful and contemplative. But yeah, to put them all together is like, you know, it's really difficult.
Yeah. Quinn, how about you? Do you like the mood changes or is it really tough?
I think it's not just like a movie where you have to act in 10 different roles. I think it's like you have to act in 10 different movies.
Exactly. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I think there is a cinematic quality to Poulenc's music. There's all this quick cutting.
Yeah.
So we're looking at somebody watering their plants and then the flower pot falls on a passing pedestrian and, right, you know, all kinds of things go on. Frank, how about you? You like playing this music?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you guys are being very, very kind, I think, because I remember talking to you, Lauren, and you were saying that the music doesn't really fit the instruments very well. Not idiomatic for the oboe? Not written well for the oboe?
Not at all.
Go ahead, take it out on Francis.
Poulenc certainly didn't know how to play the oboe because every other run has tons of alternate fingerings that I have to play, and everything is weird leaps that half the time they don't come out, and it's almost like, I mean, it's extremely difficult to get through the piece and make sure that everything comes out right. And it's even harder to sort of relax in the middle of a performance and just sit back and start enjoying the music and playing with other people because there are so many things I have to remember to do.
Yeah. Quinn, the bassoon fare any better in this idiomatic department?
It's hard to make sense of the part if the part doesn't make any sense.
Now, Frank, on the piano, I noticed there are lots of leaps as well, you know, but also some really monster chords. Did he have huge hands, do you think?
I don't know, but what was he thinking?
Now, we're beating up on Francis Poulenc, but the fact is, I mean, I think the richness that you guys really bring to this performance comes from also this sort of schizophrenic quality of his music, not only in terms of moods within the piece, but also overall, the fact that you have this wonderful flavor of sort of French salon music, sort of cabaret style, coupled with a kind of a Stravinskian modernity, and it's all taking place. And this is not like, I mean, I know this is an early piece, but, you know, for instance, that he wrote a whole oboe sonata, which is, again, not so idiomatic.
Right. I mean, this is a very early piece by Poulenc, but you look at his oboe sonata, which was one of the last pieces he wrote, if not the last mm-hmm. piece he wrote, and he also wrote a piece for woodwind sextet, and all of them are beautiful and fantastic, and I love them, but they're mm-hmm. extremely uncomfortable to play.
Man, just never learned. Was he going out with an oboist that he hated or something? Was that what it was?
I wonder if he did, because that would make a lot of sense.
Frank, you have a great advantage over your two colleagues here in rehearsal. What is that?
I can laugh and play at the same time. They can't.
I guess what happens when you laugh into an oboe? It just falls apart?
It's bad. It's game over.
Yeah?
You know, when you start... And I'm really bad about this. I laugh so much during sometimes during performances, but I laugh a lot during rehearsals, and it's usually, it's bad because I'm trying to play and I'm trying to keep my mouth in a certain way, and then suddenly I just think of something, or actually, it's bad, but I sometimes laugh when other people make mistakes, which is not
really?
Good.
Really?
She's a sadist.
It's terrible. I know. I'm a really bad person, but...
She's a sadist.
But... So if it's something that someone has never done before and they just make this mistake, I get nervous, so I start laughing, and then my embouchure falls apart, and then and then I can't play, and then I have to stop,
play.
And then everyone gets annoyed at me, and it's not good.
Quinn, how does it feel to have this wonderful support? Like you're ready to get, you're getting ready to play this, big scale or a low note that you really have to concentrate on, and here she is ready to crack up next to you.
Well, it doesn't help.
Yeah, it's true.
But I'm sure you give it back to her in spades, right? Yes?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Speaking of schizophrenic, I mean, the idea that this piece is so hard to play, and yet it was such a fun performance to listen to, really.
Thank you.
Thank you
guys
very
are great
much.
Actors and great musicians. But reed instruments are really the best for making people laugh, aren't they? I mean, it's sort of a catch-22. You can't laugh while playing them, but isn't the bassoon, Quinn, known as sort of the clown of the orchestra? Why is that?
Well, it doesn't really help that composers believe that and write music for it that way. But so I guess it is true.
We have what examples like of Peter and the Wolf, for instance,
Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Sorcerer's Apprentice, yeah.
Pretty much half of everything that's been written for it.
Right, and the sleight of hand at the beginning of the Rite of Spring. I'm not an English horn. So, seriously, guys, that was an amazing sleight of hand and a great way to start the program. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure you would
thank
like
you.
To thank everybody
thank
here
you.
For having
thank
you,
you
join
Very
us
much
from Chicago. Thanks.
Yes.
Perfecto. Lauren Loom, 17-year-old oboist, Quinn Delaney, 18-year-old bassoonist, and Frank Wu, 16-year-old pianist.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the educations of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer is that amazing pianist from Oahu, Joanne mentioned. He's 14, and his name is Evan Lin. Evan, you're going to play an incredibly wild and virtuosic piece by Sergei Prokofiev. Tell everybody what it is.
I'm going to be playing the fourth movement of Sonata No. 2 in D minor by Prokofiev. It's a really wild piece, but there's also some really calm moments, and I really enjoy playing this piece.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Evan Lin, 14-year-old pianist from Pearl City, Oahu, Hawaii. What a great performance, Evan. It was spectacular. As you said, looking forward in the midst of all that virtuoso playing, flying fingers, that moment of calm there, so lyrical the way you do it, and it reminds me of, you know, Prokofiev as starting out as a composer at, what, age 8, writing his own operas as a small child, and so that lyric gift is never subsumed under the acerbic wit and the grotesquerie. You really brought it all to life. It was really wonderful. Evan, I love this. You live with a large, extended Chinese family. Who's in the house? Your parents, you, and who else?
Oh, well, I live downstairs with my parents, and my older brother just went off to college. And upstairs are my uncle, auntie, and their two kids, and my grandpa lives upstairs, too.
So, big house?
Yeah.
All right. Glad to hear it. That's got to make for a challenging practice situation, though. Describe that kind of chaotic scene. What's going on when you're trying to practice?
Well, my piano's in the living room downstairs, and the TV room is also right next to it. And my cousins love watching TV in that room. So it's usually fine when he wants to watch TV. I just close the door, and we're both happy. But then I also have another two cousins that live somewhere else, and they visit quite often. And one of them's a little boy, and he doesn't like the door when it's closed. Yeah.
Closed doors are never a good idea. So what? Then you can hear the TV, and the kids are running around you while you're practicing?
Yeah, pretty much.
I can just imagine what that sounds like.
He's only the cutest boy ever.
Is that an exaggeration, or is that sort of what it's really like?
That's a bit exaggerated.
Glad to hear it. Very glad to hear it. So, as if you don't have enough loud noise and chaos in your life, you started a rock band. This is you on guitar.
Getting born in the state of Mississippi. Papa was a copper and mama was a hippie. In Alabama, she would swing a hammer.
So, Evan, tell us about your band. Is that you singing?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. So, where'd you start the band?
Well, I met the other guitarist when I was in sixth grade, and he's also a great violinist. I met the bassist and singer in middle school, and our drummer was new to our school this year, so I met him in ninth grade this year.
Fantastic. And really, rock music isn't chaos to you. It's actually relaxing. You've got Guns N' Roses blasting in your headphones and you're asleep? This calms you down?
Yeah, I take the school bus home every day and then I just put on my headphones and listen to music, and when I wake up, it'll be like Guns N' Roses or AC/DC or something like that.
Wow. Does classical music have that same kind of calming influence on you?
If I'm really tired, I could fall asleep to anything, but if I do, if I listen to classical music in the bus, it doesn't work.
I'm glad to hear that, because it sounds like classical music is something that engages your attention. Clearly, when you're at the piano, it engages your attention, and it certainly engaged ours. Really fantastic hearing you play and being with you, and congratulations on everything, Evan.
Thank you.
Best of luck. Evan Lin, 14-year-old pianist from Pearl City, Oahu, Hawaii. Our next performer definitely wins the Most Miles Logged to Be Here award, crossing the continental United States and the Pacific from Homedale, New Jersey. She's a talented flutist. She's 16, and her name is Lilia Shia. Lilia, while I head back to the piano, tell everyone what we're going to play and what this music has to do with a chihuahua.
We will be playing the fourth movement of Robert Muchinsky's Sonata for Flute and Piano. Although most people think the flute is a sweet, pretty instrument that plays these beautiful melodies, just as people will think a chihuahua is this cute, harmless little lap dog. In fact, when I play this piece, I want to convey to the listener that the flute is capable of expressing intense emotion, and this kind of brooding sense of unease Just as anyone who's come across the path of an angry chihuahua, like me, for example, can tell you that these little dogs will have you throw your preconceptions of them out the window.
Lilia Shear, 16-year-old flutist from Homedale, New Jersey, playing Robert Muchinsky's Sonata for Flute and Piano. We heard the fourth movement, Allegro. Lilia, it was a privilege to play with you, and I think we're actually also lucky that you played the flute at all. By all rights, you should be playing another instrument, right? Why is that?
Right. Well, in elementary school, I was in the third grade, and I heard the band, which was made up of fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, play the Star-Spangled Banner at a school assembly. So I was like, wow, these kids are so cool. They're older than me, and they're like holding all these like shiny instruments, and I was just really impressed. So there's this one part. It's... and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, where most of the band kind of dropped out, and there's this beautiful soli, this solo of one section of instruments, and I just thought, wow, like, this sounds so great. It must be the flute, because, I don't know, the sound just kind of matched what I thought the instrument looked like. So I wanted to be cool like these kids, so I joined the band, and I played the flute, and the first piece we read as an entire band was the Star-Spangled Banner. So I was like really excited to play this, you know, beautiful melody. And as we got closer and closer, I was just like, you know, shaking in anticipation. And then there was this bar that had like the number 5 over it, and I was like, like, what is this? And it turned out it was a clarinet solo.
The clarinet's not as shiny as the flute, that's for sure.
No.
But they got the good solo in the Star Spangled
Banner.
Yeah,
and I was really disappointed, but...
Wow. So it's a total mistake that you're playing the flute.
It is.
Are you okay sticking with the flute?
Yeah, you know, I've gone over my initial hurt.
Play through the pain, Lilia. I think
exactly.
It's good. It comes across. It helps the Muchinsky, sort of conflict. I think that
yeah,
comes through.
Yeah, this like inner sense of, I don't know, like torment.
Angst and torment and grave disappointment.
Yes.
So you were a little confused and I think actually cheated, really, that's all.
Yeah.
Is that confusion typical of your personality?
Well, apparently it is. If you ask my teachers or my friends, they will tell you that I always look confused.
You look confused.
I always look confused. Sometimes I am confused.
But many times they'll ask you and...
Right, well, sometimes in class the teacher will stop the lecture and... like, come over to my side and be like, Lilia, are you okay? And, you know, I'll just be like, yeah, I'm just paying attention.
Looks can be deceiving.
Definitely.
I would say you're more determined, concerned, than confused. And determination, yeah, not just with the flute. You're a long-distance runner also,
right.
Yes?
I run cross-country and I run track, most often the 3200.
Wow. How many times around the big track is that?
8 times around the track.
Very good. And how does this help you? Is it a respite from daily life and flute and school or?
Definitely. I find that it's just completely different from school, from music, and from all of these like clubs, extracurriculars I run around doing all the time. And it's definitely a way for me to let out my stress, and I find that I can obtain a lot of mental resolve from running.
Absolutely. Hey, it's that endorphin buzz.
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing like it. I used to run around Central Park in New York and start out, you know, 6 miles with, you know, the weight of the world upon me, and by the end, you know, I'd feel like I'd solved all of the world's problems, in my head anyway.
Right.
You know, it must be the same thing with you. Now, Lilia, your parents immigrated from China, but you were born in this country. Cultural conflict in your life? Anything come up like that?
Sometimes a little bit. I mean, when I'm at home, I have a younger brother, and we were both born here, so we'll be speaking English to each other, and then my parents will butt in and, you know, tell us to do our homework or to practice, and it'll be in Chinese, and then, you know, it's just always like we're speaking English and they're speaking Chinese, and kind of like we're not really communicating with each other. But I feel like, you know, it's still, we always reach an understanding of both sides. And it's very helpful to have both perspectives, an American perspective. And like, even though my parents see themselves as Chinese, they kind of bring some of like, you know, Eastern wisdom.
It's a
different set of ideals and values.
A sort of a serenity. And I'm sure you're going to bring back some of that Hawaiian serenity back home, and they'll
definitely
appreciate that.
Yes.
And thank you so much for the Muchinsky. It was
thank
a great
you.
Pleasure playing with you. Thank you, Lilia.
Are the end of summer blues setting in? Well, don't you worry, because From the Top will be kicking off the fall season in style. Christopher O'Reilly will be joined by Keith Lockhart and America's favorite orchestra, the Boston Pops, for an all-new episode of From the Top. Be sure to tune in next week.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Liberty Mutual, offering auto, home, life, and business insurance for a variety of needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy? From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a worth all their own in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. This is NPR. From NPR Music, it's From the Top, the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. Welcome back. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary year, this week from the William Charles Lunalilu Center at the Kamehameha School's Hawaii campus in Keaau on the Big Island. Coming up, a teenage cellist from Oahu treats us to a little Spanish musical flirtation. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Our residency in Hawaii is made possible with support from the U.S. Department of Education. Special thanks this week to the staff of the Kamehameha School, including Headmaster Dr. Stan Fortuna, Jr., and the Director of Campus Operations, Peter Fuchs. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. According to Hawaiian lore, the guitar was first brought to the islands by Mexican cowboys who didn't stay long enough to perpetuate their own standard tuning, but they did leave their guitars, and native Hawaiians came up with their own tuning. Over the years, a rich tradition of guitar playing developed called slack key. Up next, we have a local and talented young emissary of this traditional Hawaiian music. Please welcome, from the town of Pahoa here on the Big Island, 16-year-old Sean Robbins. Sean, congratulations are in order. You've won one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards. That's great news. What have you brought to play for us?
I have brought a slack key piece called Ku'uipo Ona Ona. Basically, it means like my darling sweetheart.
Okay, stage is yours.
Thank you.
slack key guitarist 16-year-old Sean Robbins from here on the Big Island. Beautiful, Sean.
Thank you.
Now, your parents moved to the Big Island 20 years ago. You were born here. How did you first get interested? You know, wait. Sean, this is so wrong. Interviewing you, of all people, a slack key playing, beach-loving Hawaii kid in a confining theater. Well, no, not confining. It's actually quite a beautiful theater. But still, we should talk on the beach. Sean, this is perfect. Where exactly are we?
This is Keokaha, this whole area all in here.
And we're sitting on, actual lava rock, volcanic rock, yes?
Yes.
Is this a spot that you surf often?
I don't surf here too much. I live more south of this. But there are a lot of people that surf out there when it gets big.
Uh-huh. This is looking, on the rocks here, this would scare me, because I can barely swim. But how often are you able to get out and actually enjoy the life on the beach?
Whenever I can, usually a couple times a week at least. Mm-hmm. And during the summer, it's like every day pretty much.
So tell us, the main thing that everybody is so excited about and your beautiful playing, how did you get interested in slack key guitar?
I first got interested from my uncle, actually. And he lives right on that coast over there, which is the Hamakua Coast. Mm-hmm. And I used to help him work in the summers. So I would listen to him play or whatever, and I decided that I wanted to try to learn.
And Kalapana, tell us about Kalapana.
Kalapana is pretty much where I go a lot. I got a lot of my, inspiration from there. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that are down there that play like really well and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's just, yeah. It's hardly a town now. It's like a couple of houses and a store.
It was sort of destroyed, really?
Most of it was just totally wiped out by the lava.
Wow.
In the 90s. It's the same flow that's flowing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more towards the town then, and now it's more towards the south. Now it's more south.
I guess the musical life in Kalapana is a pretty intensive sort of thing.
Yeah, pretty much everyone that lives down there plays music. It's just like you're born into it kind of thing.
Are there just like...
And they're just all like naturally talented.
Yeah, and things like that.
Yeah, when you have parties down there, we stay up there like a couple nights in a row at least.
And do you have a following there?
Following? No, not a following. No. I'm definitely not the best player there, like the worst player there.
So, Sean, you've obviously taught yourself very well. You've been playing with some of the more famous slack key players in the world.
Yeah.
Cyril, what's his name?
Cyril Pahinui.
And
Ledward Kalapana.
But the whole family. Cyril's what? Uncle or
Cyril's dad?
Cyril's dad
is he died, so I never got to actually play with him.
Uh-huh.
But Gabby Pahinui.
And were there some family secrets in the slack key world that they kept to themselves? Or
definitely, they didn't really share their tunings and stuff. Mm-hmm. Even Cyril told me a bunch of times that like he couldn't figure out the tuning. It took him a long time to figure out the tuning because when his dad was done playing, he would slack the string so no one knew what it was.
Really?
So yeah, they were really secretive about their tunings and stuff.
You're also learning the language, yes?
Yeah, in high school right now, I've been doing it this is my third year. And so when I go to college, I'm hoping to go into it further and hopefully speak fluently.
We've still got, some of the Hawaiian news programs on Hawaii Public Radio are all spoken in Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a while back where it was actually illegal to use the language?
Quite a while back.
Yeah.
Uncle Cyril's generation is one of the generations that, the generation that doesn't really speak because he used to tell me when he was little, they were not allowed to speak Hawaiian.
Wow.
Like, his parents both spoke fluent Hawaiian, but they did not speak it to him or teach him how.
And you sing in Hawaiian, too.
Yeah.
I understand.
That's kind of why I want to learn, be able to speak Hawaiian better, so... Because if I write songs, I gotta write in Hawaii, write in English, and then go have someone translate it and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I want to just be able to write fluently in Hawaiian.
Would it be too much to ask if I, grab some rays here and let you sing to me in Hawaiian a little bit?
No, not a problem.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful out there, just amazing. Sean, you can actually throw your wet towel just over the piano lid there. It'll dry it out. We'll take care of it later. I mean, Sean, clearly, you know, slack key guitar is an indigenous technique. Learning the language, and then, as we just heard, figuring out how to do that wonderful sort of falsetto with the sort of the break. I mean, yes. Which is again, you know, so particular to the Hawaiian culture and music. What is that appeals to you in comparison to, say, you know, mainland or mainstream culture, would you say?
First of all, for me at least, and probably everyone over here, this is the mainstream living over here. It's not really that much of a choice over here. I mean, this is like the usual culture over here kind of thing. Of course, I'd say a lot more laid back. I've been to the mainland not too many times, but I've gone over the summer a couple times, and it's a lot more laid back here, like just more family-oriented kind of thing, like ohana. Mm-hmm. The music, I think, is like slacky is just really relaxing kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly, you know, the dedication and the passion that you have for this music and this culture is palpable, and we're honored to have you with us.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you, Sean. Thanks again. Sean Robbins, 16 years old from Pahoa, Hawaii.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley for Tom Bagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardius Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Liberty Mutual, offering auto, home, life, and business insurance for a variety of needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy? From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.